You're listening to KRFC 88.9 FM Fort Collins. Thanks for joining us. Welcome to Community at Work, a weekly program spotlighting the issues that affect our communities by providing a closer look at the agencies and nonprofit organizations that serve the public. I'm Julie Eslick, Communications Specialist for the Health District of Northern Larimer County. On this edition of Community at Work, I talk with Megan Bryce, a mental health counselor at Counseling Partners of Northern Colorado in Windsor, and Mary Beth Regali-Euler, clinical child and adolescent psychologist for the Health District's Children, Adolescent, and Young Adult Connections Team, or CIAC. Welcome, Megan and Mary Beth. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Megan, why did you choose a particular focus on adolescents in your work as a mental health counselor?
Yeah, I just really enjoy adolescents. They seem to really open up to me. I really enjoy working with them. It's so challenging, but also really rewarding.
And this summer, you did a presentation as part of the parent education series that was hosted by CIAC, the CIAC program that I attended. And the topic was the teen brain. What are they thinking? Emphasis on thinking. One point you made about during that talk was that societal expectations for teens and how they may clash with what's going on developmentally at that stage of life, that we might be expecting maybe a little bit too much from them or not sure what to expect from them. Can you briefly explain the cognitive developmental stages?
Yeah, so I wanted to go ahead and focus in, since we're talking about adolescents specifically, about Eric Erickson's stage of development. And primarily during ages 12 to 18, they're in the identity versus role confusion stage. And during this time, it's a lot of, you know, who am I? What do I like to do? Who are my friends? There's a couple stages before and after, industry versus inferiority, which is focusing more on competency and being good enough at school, with your parents, with friends. And then afterwards, they kind of go into intimacy versus isolation, which is finding love, making those connections. So you might see a little bit of that, of all of those in adolescence, but primarily they're in the identity versus role confusion stage.
And how do the psychological changes play out in adolescence and for older adolescents as they begin transitioning to young adulthood?
So as they're transitioning through these stages, like I said, it's very fluid. So they can be in multiple stages at once. But a lot of times, you know, you're still figuring out who you are late into your later young adulthood. So just figuring out that development.
Yeah. And so while a teen, it might be psychologically still maturing, and not always capable of controlling their impulses or really seeing the long-term effects of their actions, do we sometimes expect young adults, young people, to be more adult-like and responsible than the child that they once were that we see in them?
Yeah, absolutely. What I've seen is, you know, a lot of parents or teachers will either treat their teens as children or as an adult. And we struggle to find this middle ground of trusting them, you know, or we trust them too much. So I see that a lot.
Yeah. And how do the unseen physical changes impact the teen brain?
So there's a lot going on developmentally and hormonally, especially during this time. There's the onset of puberty, which fluctuates hormones vastly. I mean, it's all over the place. And those hormones affect the way that we think, the way that we feel, the way that we act. It really goes a lot into their behavior.
Yeah. And let's bring Mary Beth from CIAC in here. As these changes begin to occur normally in youth, sometimes problems can also begin to show themselves in different types of behavior. What might teachers or parents or even coaches begin to notice that might not just be a phase of adolescence?
That's a great question, Julie. So kind of piggybacking off of what Megan has already said, teenagers are really going through such a storm in that adolescent period where they are trying to build their independence, figure out who they are, develop their identity, but they're still not quite ready to make that leap to be independent. They still need their parents or their grandparents, those trusted adults in their lives. And so this tension between trying to be independent and also you still are a kid in a lot of ways can create mood swings. It can create a lot of pushing and pulling with family members, with parents. And so it's very natural. And I use the quote, the air quotes, which you can't see on radio, but air quotes normal for teens to be experiencing that. So it can be really hard for caregivers and other important adults in a teen's life to figure out, well, what's normal and what should I be concerned about? So I always recommend that people consider, has the person's behaviors changed in a way that seems uncharacteristic? So as I mentioned, sometimes people have mood swings and that's completely normal. However, if someone that you love is starting to lock themselves in their room every day after school and not coming down for dinner for days at a time, starting to do that for a couple weeks, that is probably out of character for them. If someone that you love is not wanting to engage in the activities that they used to enjoy doing, for instance, if they used to love theater club and then suddenly they dropped out and you just notice, hey, that used to bring my kiddo so much joy. What's going on? That's probably an indicator that something might be going on for them. Also, the basic needs. Is your child's eating habits changing, sleeping habits changing? Are they withdrawing from friends? How are their academics? So all of those pieces kind of can build a case for you to see, okay, there might be something going on with my child. Again, I also want to point out that irritability and mood swings can be completely normal, as difficult as it can be as a parent.
Yeah. Yeah, because I can imagine, you know, parents are trying to set those boundaries and the kids need some of those boundaries, but they also need, some of the independence and how are they reacting to that. But yeah, if they are really withdrawing or if they're getting very angry and irritable and something that's really out of character, that's something to really think about. And what age does a person often start showing signs maybe of a mental illness or of some mental issues?
Yeah, that's a tough one to answer, Julie, because for some conditions, you might be seeing symptoms as early as preschool or elementary school, specifically attention deficit disorder. So ADHD, you might be seeing those symptoms in elementary school or autism spectrum disorder. We have seen anxiety start to pop up more so in elementary school than I think we have in the past. And depression tends to hit around middle school, high school, and of course we know anxiety and depression can also have a sudden onset in adulthood as well.
Yeah. And even sometimes in college, I know there's some things that can sort of come about, maybe a stressful situation also.
Definitely.
Being away from home and all those sorts of things.
But, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think that also with the teenage years, when there's so many body changes and now that social media is so such a big part of teenagers' lives. Eating disorders usually crop up around middle school, high school. Even children in elementary school, we're starting to see concerns about body image, which is it's really hard to see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KRFC Fort Collins, and this is Community at Work. I'm your host, Julie Yeslick, Communications Specialist for the Health District of Northern Larimer County. Tonight, we're talking with Megan Bryce, a mental health counselor at Counseling Partners of Northern Colorado, and Mary Beth Regali-Euler, a child and adolescent psychologist with the Health District's Kayak team, and we're talking about the teen brain. Before the break, we were talking about some behaviors that adolescents in particular might exhibit that may not necessarily fit the normal teenage phase. What are some of the warning signs, Mary Beth, that a behavioral issue with your teen, like being angry or impulsive or suddenly withdrawing, when might that, we talked a little bit about that might raise concerns, but how can families really find out if, in fact, an adolescent is suffering from a mental health issue or a substance use issue, that it's something, you know, beyond just about, you know, one bout of depression or anxiety that kind of resolves itself?
Mm-hmm. I think that the key to that is if somebody is able to kind of recover from those bumps in the road. So it's completely normal, appropriate, healthy for someone to have anxiety about an upcoming dance or to break out into sobs when they have their first breakup or a friendship fight. Or if they get a grade that they weren't expecting at school, having emotional reactions is actually healthy and normal. If it's something that is going to start impeding someone's ability to function, that's what counselors and psychologists tend to go back to is, okay, how is it impairing your functioning? Are you able to do the things that you need to do on a daily basis? Are you able to get out of bed? Are you taking showers? Are you getting dressed? Are you eating as much as you need to? Are you eating throughout the day? Maybe you're eating too much. The child is eating too much. So just looking at those basic needs and functioning really becomes part of what parents need to keep an eye out for. And I think I'm really glad that you mentioned impulsiveness, because I think, and Megan alluded to this as well, is that the brain is not done fully forming until age 25. And the part of the brain in particular that's in charge of impulse control, the frontal lobe, is still far from maturity during high school years, which is a really hard pill to swallow, parents. I'm sorry. But that just means that teens are going to, it's normal and healthy behavior to test boundaries and to experiment and take risks. And we just need to hope that our kids are taking risks that aren't going to have significant consequences for them. But just having a child who maybe stays out too late from curfew one night, that's not necessarily a sign that there's something significant going right. on. Sure. So just kind of take some of those behaviors with a grain of salt. A lot of that is going to be typical. But if they're not able to get into bed, not able to sleep, not able to wake up, not able to go to school, then there's really probably something going on.
Yeah. And where can families turn locally for help in addressing an illness if it is diagnosed, or where can they go maybe to even look for a diagnosis if they think that that's something that they might need?
That's a great question. So I think that the first place to really start with, which might seem obvious, but I think the first place is to start with your child and to talk with them. Parents are sometimes surprised at how open their children can be once you open the conversation and set that stage that you are a safe person for your child to talk to. So I always encourage parents to seek out some alone time with their child and let them know that you care about them, you love them, you're worried about them, and give them the space to talk. So teenagers don't really like to be interrogated. So kind of set the stage and then let them share what they feel comfortable with. And if you are worried and when you're speaking with them, you can say, you know, I want you to be able to talk to me, but if you don't want to talk to me, I can find someone who would be able to talk with you and give you space to talk about anything that's going on for you, and ask them if they'd be open to going to counseling. So sometimes parents sometimes start with the pediatrician even. They start there and ask, you know, I don't know where to go. But I highly recommend, obviously, contacting the Kayak program, which I'll talk about in a minute. But there's also a really great educational-focused training that the Connections program actually puts on. It's called the Youth Focused Mental Health First Aid Training, and it's an all-day training that's free, and the next one is on Tuesday, November 27th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And during that training, adults are given information about mental health with adolescents and children and given concrete skills and strategies on how to talk about these things with children and teens, which parents have found really invaluable. So if anyone is interested in signing up for this free training, like I said, it's November 27th, which is a Tuesday from 8 a.m. to 5. You just go ahead and give a call at 970-530-2883 and contact Emily Leatham to sign up.
And would you like to talk a little more about the Kayak? maybe tell our listeners about the Kayak partnership and the program in a little more detail, what that provides to the community?
Definitely. So the Kayak program has been around for almost 3 years now, and we've actually served more than 3,000 children ages 0 to 24 who've been referred to the Kayak program for treatment since the grant began. And Kayak actually partners with every single Poudre school district and school, elementary, middle, and high schools, and 22 primary care clinics currently referred to the Kayak program. So as a team, we are multidisciplinary with master's level mental health specialists, care coordinators, a school liaison, psychiatry team, and myself as a psychologist. And what we do as a team is we aim to do accurate assessment to determine individual and family needs and get them to where they need to go, because it can be so daunting to search the internet for a good fit. Our providers are able to find the to do the assessment to figure out what your child needs and then find the best match based on those needs.
And I know Kayak is clearly meeting a big need in our community. I understand that schools are reporting more kids are being helped, and we're reducing some of the pressure on some of those school counselors, and that many clients and referral agencies have reported that the families are getting the right care for their particular situation, which I know is important. So I think that's been a wonderful response for that program. And Megan, let's delve into societal influences on teens and how they think and react. This generation has grown up, as Mary Beth was saying, with electronics, and they might communicate a little bit differently and constantly, it seems like, with their friends. What are some of the downsides for them emotionally and mentally in being active on social media?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot more anxiety and depression in our teens related to the increase in social media, because you're putting this image out there of only what you want to show the world. So our teens are seeing this facade of what others want the world to see, and it kind of starts a downward spiral of comparison and thinking about self-image. We're also seeing a lot of access to misinformation, inaccurate information. You can go on Google, you can Google everything. There's also an increase in community, so you can find communities for everything, which is great.
Right.
But also there's a downside to that, because you can find a negative community and get really involved in that as well. So I think one thing, you know, our teens are looking at their phones all day. They're looking at computers at school, and their brain is being constantly stimulated. Mm-hmm. So that affects the way that we sleep, which sleep then affects the way that we act and behave.
Right.
So seeing all sorts of fun things with this social media influx.
And how can parents help their kids be safe on social media and understand some of those pitfalls that are out there? I know they might think that parents don't really know what's what's happening on social media or what's happening online, but are there ways that we can sort of help, you know, maybe think about electronic timeouts or just different ways that we can keep them safe while they're online, but also maybe have some time when we're unplugged as well?
Definitely. I really liked what Mary Beth said about taking that time to talk to your child. I think that opening up the discussion is going to help so much with safety and with misinformation. So letting them know that you're a safe person to talk to and to open up that conversation if they saw anything that they were unsure of or maybe they had questions about, I think that's a really big part of it. I always like to recommend, you know, taking some time out of your day where it's no phones, just an hour before bed where you're just coloring, maybe you're playing a board game, just taking some time away from your phone for a little bit. But for some people, that's not possible.
Yeah. and you mentioned sleep patterns, and I know those can change during adolescence. And that teens are just wired to go to bed later and get up later. And this is maybe a question for either one of you. Do you think that the movement to a later start time at the high schools, and we're seeing that locally but also nationally, do you see that making a difference for kids, for high school kids, I mean, adolescents?
I can go first. I think that it definitely would have a great impact. We know that the sleep-deprived brain, I read a research study once that said that the sleep-deprived brain is able to function about as well as somebody who has a blood alcohol level of 0.08.
Yeah.
So I would always talk to students about when I was working at a university counseling center where the students were old enough to drink. I said, well, if you wouldn't go to class after you had a drink, then you probably wouldn't go to class sleep-deprived. So how do we work on your sleep patterns? And I think that the school start time will make a difference, but I also think that regardless of school start time, kids need to get into bed earlier. And what I've really noticed is that kids are, just like adults, are taking their phones to bed and have it right next to them or in bed with them all hours of the night. So I think that the change first has to happen at home, and that's for those parents and caregivers, too, to put our phones down and have 9 p.m. All the phones are plugged in and out of the bedroom. I think that's a great way to have a boundary for everybody in the family, not just the teens.
I completely agree with that. I think setting up even a bedtime routine, doing something that you're comfortable doing, relaxing to you, whether that's reading a book, taking a bath, something like that, implementing that into your nighttime routine to start telling your brain to go to bed.
Right.
Because when you're constantly on your phone is stimulating your brain. Now, for a lot of people, that isn't realistic to keep the phone out of the bedroom. And I know for a lot of teenagers that won't happen. So there are apps that you can use. There are blue light filters to kind of help with that stimulation. But of course, it's not the ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, I use one that at 10 o'clock, my phone starts to get kind of gets to like a more mellow yellow or something like that. It's more of a softer and kind of says like, now is the time to start getting ready for bed and turning that off. And and if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KRFC Fort Collins, and this is Community at Work. I'm your host, Julie Eslick, Communications Specialist for the Health District of Northern Larimer County. Tonight, we're talking with Megan Bryce of Counseling Partners of Northern Colorado and Mary Beth Regali-Euler of the Health District's Kayak Team about how to help empower teens as their brains are developing. Megan, can you explain a little bit about why adolescents are maybe more susceptible to addiction and what is happening to the dopamine in their brain?
Yeah, so as Mary Beth said, the adolescent brain doesn't fully develop until age 25. So during that time period, the brain is still malleable. It's still growing. It's still developing. So that makes addiction more susceptible. Also, during that time, you get an increased dopamine response, which is what makes you feel good. You get a dopamine response when you work out, when you give a hug. It's the chemical in your brain that makes you feel good. So during adolescence, you get an increase of that when you do risky behavior. So during that time, the reward for substance abuse and seeking out those maybe negative coping skills, you get an increased dopamine response.
A drug addiction then it's really is a like a brain disease, right? It's not a moral failing or a parental neglect. It's really something that starts happening in our brain and a response at that time to those stimulants.
Yeah, definitely. And especially if, you know, you get that high dopamine response, you're always going to be seeking that.
Yeah. And this seems like useful information to share with teens, especially if their peers are using drugs or alcohol. In your practice, or in either of yours, have you experienced teens changing their behavior once they understand the risks on a developing brain?
Yeah, I think giving the teens and the adolescents the information, it allows them to make an informed decision on their choices. Of course, not all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's societal influence, and sometimes it's really them weighing that risk versus benefit. What's going to benefit me? Do the risks outweigh the benefits?
Right. And especially when it's difficult for them to see the long-term consequences and
Absolutely.
Just not really understand that and what that might mean down the line. Mary Beth, what steps can a parent or guardian take to find help for a local teen who might be struggling with substance abuse or addiction?
Well, I would strongly encourage families to call the CIAC program. So we offer free consultation over the phone with parents who are just concerned or worried or want some suggestions on how to start a conversation with their child. There's mental health specialists that are able to kind of walk you through what that would look like. And if you do need referrals for local resources for your child to be assessed or to get actual counseling related to substance use or addiction, CIAC program can do that according to your child's specific needs and insurance type. So definitely call the CIAC program for that.
Great. And Megan, why is it important to build empathy for teens and encourage them as they begin to find their own identity like we've been talking about?
Yeah, building that empathy and that trusting relationship is so important. Allowing them to have that space and that freedom to really develop who they are and figure out that identity piece is so important for them during this stage. Being able to allow them to discover who they are without telling them who they should be. I would say that's really important.
That's a good point. Yeah, to give them opportunities maybe to find ways to express themselves or different interests. And we can still be supportive of that, right?
Yes.
I know they may pretend like they don't want, well, I don't have a teen yet, but we may pretend like, you know, they don't want mom or dad around. But I imagine that having that support and knowing that we care about what they're doing and
Definitely.
What their interests are is important. Is important for them. And what are some of the ways to maybe help them to practice stretching themselves and becoming more independent? Are there suggestions or things that they might do where it's a, you know, maybe a limited risk, say, or, mm-hmm. or, you know, or an opportunity to try out different things, but I don't know, still protect them a little bit? I don't know.
Yeah. Me personally, I would say just encouraging them to find something that they enjoy doing and support them fully with that, you know, and allow them to, if they want to join the basketball team or join the art club, to really encourage and foster that. As far as, you know, allowing them that freedom and that independence, just there's little things you can do every day to give them that little bit of responsibility mm-hmm. maybe that you might not have given before. It doesn't have to go 0 to 100
right.
in a day, but just little opportunities to give that responsibility back to them.
Yeah. Can do it. What do you think, Mary Beth?
You know, I think that something that comes to mind is one way to kind of foster independence is to invite the teen to the table to have the conversation of what that might look like. So I'm guessing that your teen at home probably has a few things in their mind about like independent. So perhaps having a conversation about what would be reasonable for you and your teen comes to terms, okay, how can you can borrow the car, but it's your responsibility to fill up the gas tank every week. I also think that having teens look for part-time work is a great mm-hmm. opportunity to learn a lot of life skills related to responsibility, financial management. So I think that if teens can find a way to either have a job or volunteer, those are great ways to not only build some independence but also build some identity,
right.
discover what they enjoy and what really sparks their passion.
Yeah, and then it's not just those relationships at school, mm-hmm. in the school. Yeah, to kind of stretch out and meet other people and have other, experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Well, that's all the time we have for this evening. If you're wondering whether your child, grandchild, student, or athlete may be struggling with the mental health or substance use issue, or you're interested in classes, you can find more information at mentalhealthconnections.org or make an appointment with the kayak team by calling 970-221-3308. Counselor Megan Bright reached at 970-400-1451 or Counseling Partners NOCO, it's NOCO.com. And thank you to Megan and Mary Beth for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners. Tune in to Community at Work. Critter Patter is up next here on KRFC 88.9 Fort Collins, where we entertain, inspire, and inform Northern Colorado's community radio. Have a great night.